Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. A new report from the UN Office for Disaster Risk Reduction and the UN Weather Agency, WMO, published on Thursday, warns that half of the world's countries are not protected by multi-hazard early warning systems. Coinciding with the International Day for Disaster Risk Reduction, the numbers are worst of all for developing countries on the front lines of climate change. Less than half of the least developed countries and only a third of small island developing states have adequate early warning systems in place. The report's based on new data that shows countries with limited coverage have mortality rates during disasters that are 8 times higher than those with substantial to comprehensive coverage. The world is failing to invest in protecting the lives and livelihoods of those on the front line, said UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. The world's at risk of yet another year of record hunger as the global food crisis continues to drive more people into worsening levels of acute food insecurity, the World Food Programme, WFP, warned on Thursday. In a call for urgent action to address the root causes of rising hunger ahead of World Food Day, the agency said the current crisis was down to a confluence of competing crises caused by climate shocks, conflict and economic instability. The number of hungry people around the world has shot up from 282 million to around 345 million since the beginning of 2022. And by mid-year, WFP had reached just over 111 million in need, aiming to reach a record 153 million by year's end. WFP chief David Beasley said things can and will get worse unless there is a large-scale and coordinated effort to address the root causes of this crisis. And finally, more than 30 trade unions and other worker representatives from 10 countries across Southeast Asia have pledged to push for a more sustainable and fairer economy across the vast region that enables decent work for all. Meeting in the Philippines earlier this week, the conference marked the first face-to-face meeting of the group since the COVID-19 pandemic began, focused on strategies for resilience and recovery moving forward. The countries represented were Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, Timor-Leste, and Vietnam. In a joint conclusion declaration, representatives charted and identified ways in which they could all collaborate to tackle growing inequalities and violations of workers' rights. Matt Wells, UN News.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The House Select Committee investigating the U.S. Capitol insurrection has voted to subpoena former President Donald Trump, demanding he turn over documents and testify about his role in fomenting violence on January 6, 2021. The committee's vote on Thursday afternoon capped what's widely expected to be its last public hearing. After headlines, we'll spend the rest of the hour playing extended excerpts of the hearing. The Supreme Court has rejected a bid by Donald Trump's lawyers to derail a federal criminal probe into whether Trump violated the Espionage Act and presidential records laws and whether he obstructed justice to cover up those crimes. On Thursday, justices refused to take up a challenge by Trump's lawyers to a lower court ruling allowing the Justice Department to use records marked as classified in its investigation into documents held by Trump at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. This week, reports emerged that a Trump aide told the FBI he was ordered to move boxes of documents out of the basement storage area into Trump's residence at Mar-a-Lago. The FBI reportedly has surveillance footage showing the boxes being transferred. In North Carolina, 5 people were killed, including a police officer, after a gunman opened fire on a walking trail in a residential area of Raleigh Thursday afternoon. Police say they've arrested a suspect identified only as a white male juvenile who's been hospitalized. Raleigh's mayor, Marianne Baldwin, spoke after the shooting.
We have to end this mindless gun violence that is happening in our country. We have work to do, but there are too many victims, and so we have to wake up.
A jury in Florida has rejected the death penalty for Nicholas Cruz, who killed 17 people in a 2018 mass shooting at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. On Thursday, Cruz was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole after a single juror refused to recommend a death sentence. Under Florida law, death penalty cases require a unanimous decision. The life sentence drew angry reactions from family members who packed the courtroom. This is Ilhan Mark Aladef, whose daughter Alyssa was among Cruz's victims.
I'm disgusted with the system. That you can allow 17 dead and 17 others shot and wounded and not give the death penalty. What do we have the death penalty for? What is the purpose of it?
Some Parkland survivors were against capital punishment. Cameron Caskey, who was 17 and a junior at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas at the time of the attack, said, quote, "The death penalty is barbaric, and implementing state violence will not bring any of the victims back." He added, "Make no mistake, it's the politicians who support the gun lobby that should be held accountable for this," he said. The Biden administration has started expelling Venezuelan asylum seekers to Mexico under an expansion of the pandemic and Trump-era Title 42 policy that's been used to block at least 2 million migrants from applying for asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border. The U.S. government this week announced it will only accept up to 24,000 Venezuelans under a new plan, while rapidly expelling others who don't meet strict financial and other criteria. Some 25,000 Venezuelan asylum seekers were apprehended at the southern border in the month of August alone, as people continue to flee in part due to the catastrophic impacts of U.S. economic sanctions on Venezuela. This is Venezuelan asylum seeker Leonesi Castillo, who was expelled to Mexico Thursday.
I entered the United States. They sent us back with no response. They registered our fingerprints, took our pictures, and then sent us back over the bridge saying, like, go back home again. They didn't say anything. They requested that we have a relative who has been living there in the U.S. for over 4 or 5 years. It's unfair. We want a response. We're in Mexico. We've run out of money. We've had our bags stolen. Shelters don't take us in. We're stranded in the street. Nobody wants to help us.
In more immigration news, the Texas Tribune reports a group of asylum seekers who were flown from Texas to Martha's Vineyard, an island off Massachusetts, by Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis last month, may be able to apply for a special visa to stay in the United States. This comes after Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar certified the 49 asylum seekers had been victims of a crime when they were coerced into boarding the flights to Martha's Vineyard. This could pave the way for them to apply for a visa for victims or witnesses of a crime. The asylum seekers were convinced to board the planes by a woman identified as Perla Huerta, a former counterintelligence agent who falsely promised them jobs and housing if they went to Massachusetts. In Ukraine, Russian officials have asked residents of Kherson to evacuate as Ukraine's military advances on the Russian-occupied city seeking to recapture it. Kherson is part of territory that Russian President Vladimir Putin claimed to have annexed in a move condemned this week by the UN General Assembly. In Iraq, lawmakers have elected Abdul Latif Rashid as the country's new president, paving the way for the formation of a new government after a year of political uncertainty and conflict in the Iraqi parliament. Rashid immediately named Mohammed Shia al-Sudani as new prime minister. Al-Sudani now has 30 days to form a new government. Protests rocked Iraq for months in response to the political turmoil, with supporters and opponents of the powerful Iraqi cleric Muqtada al-Sadr clashing in Baghdad. Al-Sadr resigned from parliament in August. His party, the Sadrist Movement, won the most seats in last October's parliamentary election but failed to win an outright majority. Al-Sadr's supporters occupied the Iraqi parliament in an effort to block lawmakers from choosing a new prime minister. Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank fatally shot a Palestinian man during a raid on the Jenin refugee camp this morning. 20-year-old Matin Dabaya is at least the 160th Palestinian killed by Israel in the West Bank this year. Among the wounded was physician Abdullah Al-Ahmad, who's in critical condition with a gunshot wound to the head. Al Jazeera reports Israeli forces were filmed shooting at ambulance crews. A new report warns some wild animal populations are declining on a devastating scale. The 2022 Living Planet Index finds populations of amphibians, birds, fish, mammals, and reptiles that were tracked for the study have declined by an average of 69% since 1970. The report's authors note populations of many species have increased over that time, even as the biodiversity of animal species continued to plunge rapidly due to the combined effects of habitat loss, overfishing, pollution, and the climate crisis. A warning to our audience, this story contains graphic footage and descriptions of prison violence. In Florida, a federal judge has held the Federal Bureau of Prisons and a local warden in contempt of court over their neglect and indifference to the plight of a 54-year-old prisoner who was dying of cancer. Frederick Marvin Bardell was diagnosed with an intestinal mass several years ago at a time when his tumor was treatable, but his repeated requests for compassionate release and health care were denied and his cancer metastasized. In a scathing 14-page ruling, U.S. District Judge Roy Bolton wrote, quote, "The treatment Mr. Bardell received in the last days of his life is inconsistent with the moral values of a civilized society and unworthy of the Department of Justice of the United States of America," unquote. The judge's order contained photographs of Bardell just after he'd arrived at a hospital bleeding, incontinent, and emaciated, after he was, quote, deposited on the curb of the Dallas-Fort Worth airport to fend for himself, unquote. He died 9 days after his release. In more news from Florida, the Miami Herald has published shocking footage showing how 62-year-old Florida prisoner Craig Ridley was left to starve and die after prison guards broke his neck in 2017. Video taken by a prison official shortly after the catastrophic injury reveals guards ignored Ridley's protest that, quote, "My neck is broken and I'm paralyzed."
Assistant Sergeant Nettles and place an inmate on the ground right here. At this time, the inmate's refusing to walk to go to medical for his post-use force physical and pre-confinement. Got a wheelchair on the way.
The guards repeatedly accused Ridley of faking his injury and hoisted his limp body into a wheelchair. Craig Ridley died October 12, 2017, 5 years ago this week, intubated and unable to communicate. The Social Security Administration has announced its largest increase in benefits in more than 40 years. On Thursday, officials said retirees and people who receive disability benefits will see an 8.7% boost to their monthly checks beginning next year. The increase comes after year-over-year inflation topped 8% over the same period. Meanwhile, new housing data shows U.S. rents increased by 7.2% over the last year, while an index of U.S. food prices grew by more than 11%. The Wall Street Journal reports Kroger and Albertsons are in talks to secure a deal that, if approved, would unite the two largest supermarket operators in the United States. Progressive groups are calling on the Federal Trade Commission to reject the merger, warning supermarket consolidation usually leads to price hikes. And civil rights activist and minister Charles Melvin Sherrod died this week at the age of 85 in Albany, Georgia. Sherrod joined the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee as its first full-time field secretary in 1961. He was a key figure in the Albany movement, which galvanized Georgians in the fight against segregation and for voting rights in Jim Crow South. He later went on to serve as Albany City Commissioner and teach at Albany State University, along with his wife, Shirley Sherrod, and others. He founded the Black-owned Farming Collective and Land Trust New Communities. Shirley Sherrod said of her late husband, quote, "His life serves as a shining example of service to one's fellow man." And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. Thank you.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and it's a beautiful fall day here in Wisconsin. We're moving from golds to scarlets, and I hope wherever you are, you have a little beauty in your life, too.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This is the October 13th, 2022 episode of Free Thought Radio, and Buzz Kemper is back engineering the show.
Yeah,
hello,
we
Buzz.
Are really honored.
Dan, Annie Laurie, it's so great to be back. Tell you what do all these buttons in front of you do?
Just don't push that big fat red one.
Oh, okay.
So Buzz, and you regular listeners know Buzz, what, for like 10 years?
And, of course, our announcer that you hear his
voice.
Is
our announcer,
every week.
But it was. And so what are you doing? You're just fixing things or just reacquainting yourself?
Subbing.
I'm subbing in. Your regular engineer, Grant Blaschka, has contracted the dreaded COVID. He's fine, but obviously he doesn't want to pass it along. So I am filling in, and it has been a long time, but I have to say it's really good to be back, and it's kind of coming back to me.
Great. Well, we are very grateful, Buzz.
It's nice to be here with you both.
Buzz is owner of the recording studio Audio for the Arts, and many of the engineers there have produced and engineered our show, Free Thought Radio, right here in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall. Free Thought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, big emphasis on from. FFRF has those two purposes of keeping religion out of government and also being the nation's, North America's largest membership organization for people who are personally free from religion. And if you are a member, thank you. And if not, we would love to send you information, including a copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today, either PDF online or hard copy, and a brochure about our 45 years of major achievements that you can ask for info at FFRF.org. There's an Ask for Info link on our homepage. And I just wanted to say, speaking of the weather and thinking about human-made climate change, there was a report this week, another report, I think it's every 2 years we get them from the World Wildlife Fund, showing a huge, distressing drop in global wildlife. We have lost 2/3 of our wildlife in 50 years. This is a crisis. Oh. This is a human-made crisis. And we can blame religion for egging it on, because if you read Genesis, it says, go forth and multiply and have dominion over the earth. Be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over the earth. And we have been fruitful and multiplied and multiplied. And nobody talks about overpopulation, because they keep saying we can feed our planet, but we are taking over all of the planet and all of the wildlife refuge, and this is what is happening. And even in my own garden, I rejoice to see a bumblebee these days. I barely saw butterflies. This is something that the secular movement is already embracing, but we need to do more.
So religion has had a huge impact, and, you know, just blindness, really. However, our country is becoming less and less religious, but the courts are becoming more religious, and this is, you know, portending a train wreck, I think. Maybe the train wreck's already happening. But there's one encouraging pushback, and that is the increase of secular caucuses in the government, such as the Congressional Freethought Caucus in the House of Representatives. Our guest today in the second half of the show is a Minnesota state legislator, Representative Mike Freiberg, who co-founded the new Secular Government Caucus in that state, which works, as they say, to resist Christian nationalism and defend church-state separation. This caucus, which was co-founded by two Minnesota representatives and two senators, now has 24 members.
Representative Freiberg identifies as an agnostic, and we are excited to connect with him in a few minutes.
The music between segments today celebrates the fall season with some gentle melodies. We're going to hear the 1946 performance of Autumn Serenade by Gene Krupa and his orchestra, Harvest Moon by Neil Young, Autumn in New York by Chet Baker, and Falling Leaves by the B.G. Adair Trio. This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist show, which is on Facebook Live, I joined FFRF Director of Governmental Affairs, Mark Dan, to speak with Waj Ali. He's author of the new book, Go Back to Where You Came From, and other helpful recommendations on how to become American. Waj is a liberal Muslim who supports state-church separation. He writes for the Daily Beast. He was a New York Times contributing op-ed writer, a CNN commentator, a host for the HuffPost, and co-host of Al Jazeera America's The Stream.
During the show, Mark and Dan asked Waj Ali to describe Christian nationalism.
Yeah, it's the same problem. Look, it's white supremacy, but with a cross, right? And Christian nationalism cannot be discussed without understanding white supremacy, specifically for those who are children of immigrants, for those who are people of color, for those who are not seen as white. It's this perpetual feeling when you're this outsider that your country will turn on you on a dime. You have to love a country that doesn't love you back. You fight for a country that doesn't have your back. You're both us and them, a native and a foreigner, a citizen and a suspect. And your citizenship is conditional with an asterisk on it, and it will be revoked, right? If the majority turns on you, that's it. You're the scapegoat. You're the villain. Now, with Christian nationalism, we're now seeing this, the revival, if you will, of Christian nationalism, thanks to MAGA, thanks to Trumpism, thanks to Marjorie Taylor Greene, where now they're openly saying, without any subtlety whatsoever, there's no separation of church and state. This is a Christian nation, which completely goes against both the Constitution and the deliberate intention of the founders who put that there for a reason, knowing full well that, yes, even though it's white Christian men mostly, we want to have religious freedoms as well. And so what they want is a country where their tribe is in power. White Christian men, white Christian men who think exactly like them. Mike Pence is, I think we would agree, perhaps the whitest, most Christian, most Republican man on earth. Literally prostituted himself for Donald Trump, debased himself for years. It was Justice Ludwig, who you saw him at the January 6th hearing, a very well-renowned conservative justice, who said, you have to do your duty. You have to certify this election. Joe Biden won. And Mike Pence is like, fine, I guess I'll do it. And as a result, what happened, guys? They tried to kill him. If they try to kill Mike Pence, what are they going to do to these two white future fodder of hellfire and this brown Muslim guy? What are they going to do to you as a white Christian or like semi-Christian who kind of disagrees with Trump? It's a fascist movement cosplaying as Christians who want to create a white supremacist theocracy, and the rest of us, if we play along, we'll be lucky to rent a room.
Waj was really good. He's very animated during that show. He's the author of the new book, Go Back Where You Came From. You can watch that Ask an Atheist show with Waj Ali on FFRF's YouTube channel by looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist. And you can also tune into the live show next week at 12 noon Central on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the show.
On our TV show this week, which broadcasts on Sundays, Free Thought Matters, we talk with the journalist and author Catherine Stewart. We've had her on this show many times. Her books include The Power Worshippers, Inside the Dangerous Rise of Christian Nationalism. I think you're detecting a theme here. She's a leading authority on the politics, of course, of Christian nationalism.
And during the interview, Catherine warns us to be careful not to ignore what the Christian nationalists are actually saying.
You know, I've been following this movement for 14 years, and one thing that I've learned is that we really need to listen to the movement leaders. They've been telling us for a long time that they want to tear down the separation of church and state. They're taking aim at many of our individual rights that many of us hold so dear. They reject the principles of pluralism and equality that represent the best of the American promise. They want to take back our schools and bring our nation back to a sort of mythical time that never was. But sometimes it's very difficult to actually hear what they're saying. I think a lot of times people reframe what they're hearing in order to make themselves more comfortable with it. But they've been very clear. They're not hiding. It's just that we're not listening.
And you can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters actually right now on YouTube, on FFRF's YouTube channel. Just look for the Free Thought Matters playlist.
And if you live in one of the 13 cities where the Free Thought Matters TV show is broadcast on local stations, you can watch that show every Sunday morning.
Or in Madison at 11 p.m. on
Sunday
evening. We're the one, odd one out.
But for stations and time to see if you can watch, check ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters.
So we are coming on strong to promote Free Thought this week. We just put up 4 more I'm an Atheist and I Vote billboards, and that's in San Antonio. They are going up in San Antonio in time for our major national convention there at the end of October. And we are working with FACT, and that stands for Freethinkers Association of Central Texas. So they paid for about half of the billboards, which was very kind. And we have on that billboard a student, 26-year-old Cody Valdez, and he lives in San Antonio. And he's pictured in front of the state capitol saying, "I'm an atheist and I vote." And in our news release that we sent to media there in San Antonio, we did some bragging about the fact that almost a third of U.S. adults today now identify as atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular. In fact, spokesperson Katie Gaines, whom we've been working with, and she'll be volunteering at the convention, points out that the number of nuns who are Hispanic is at least 23%. And, of course, the midterm elections are so important, so we've been doing this secular vote campaign since July, and we are really proud of Cody and looking forward to meeting him. He's going to be coming up at the convention, and when we show the billboards, we'll have him come up on stage.
And then Toledo?
Well, in a different billboard campaign in Toledo, we are putting up a slogan. We had put this on a bumper sticker, and it caught the eye of one of our 80-year-old members, a retired biology professor from the University of Toledo, Lloyd Jones. And he called me up, and he said, "I'd like to put that up on a billboard in my hometown of Toledo where I can see it." And he offered to pay for it. So that is a good deal. And it's a very striking billboard. It just went up. It's kind of right by stoplights. You cannot miss it. It's 10 feet by 22 feet, and if you live in Toledo or near Toledo, it's on the corner of Door Northeast at Reynolds. And, of course, the slogan is an obvious rejoinder to the backlash against COVID-19 vaccinations, and atheists repeatedly have been shown to be more likely to be vaccinated for COVID-19 than anybody else. In a Pew survey last August, 2021, showed that of 10,000 Americans, the white evangelical Protestant Christians were least likely to be vaccinated, and they did suffer because of this, at 57%, atheists most likely at 99%. But, of course, the slogan means more than that. We really hope that it not only encourages vaccinations, but it also points out that we want to celebrate the power of reason and science to improve this world, our only world. So we thank Professor Lloyd Jones for bringing that message to Toledo, Ohio.
And before we take a break, let me just mention that FFRS is complaining about a major national police community partnership. It's called Faith in Blue, promoted by the Office of Community-Oriented Policing Services at
the Department of Justice,
which has a mission to build neighborhoods, but it's mostly just faith-based. And this huge nationwide event, we are encouraging them, they should focus more on the secular, natural
community
groups. So you can see that press release at on our website. So we're going to take a break, and after that, we're going to hear a feminist song by the late Loretta Lynn, and then a seasonal song by Joni Mitchell and James Taylor. Then we're going to talk with Minnesota State Representative Mike Freiberg about the new secular governmental caucus that he and his colleagues have formed in that state. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
as Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio. I wish I could say it like you, Buzz, every week, if I had that voice. I'm Dan Barker.
And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and I'm sure you were saddened, as we were, but to hear of the death of the singer Loretta Lynn last week, and she was 90. Loretta Lynn identified, of course, as a conservative Christian. She rarely ventured into social issues, but she did blaze a path for women, or at least certain kinds of women. And in 1975, she co-wrote and recorded a song about birth control. Many doctors credited that song with an increased awareness of the need and the access to family planning, especially in rural areas. So let's listen to Loretta Lynn singing The Pill.
You whined me and dined me when I was your girl. Promised if I'd be your wife, you'd show me the world. But all I've seen of this old world is a bed and a doctor bill. I'm tearing down your brooder house, 'cause now I've got the pill. All these years I've stayed at home while you had all your fun. And every year that's gone by, another baby's come. There's gonna be some changes made right here on Nursery Hill. You fed this chicken your last time, 'cause now I've got the pill. This old maternity dress I've got is going in the garbage. The clothes I'm wearing from now on won't take up so much yardage. Mini skirts, hot pants, and a few little fancy frills. Yeah, I'm making up for all those years since I've got the pill. I'm tired of all your crowing, how you and your hens play. Why holding a couple in my arms, another's on the way. This chicken's done for upper nest, and I'm ready to make a deal. And you can't afford to turn it down, 'cause you know I've got the pill. Not too good to be real. Oh, but Daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause Mama's got the pill. Oh, Daddy, don't you worry none, 'cause Mama's got the pill.
That was the incomparable Loretta Lynn. I thought those were cute lines. She's living in a brooder house in Nursery Hill.
And all those chicken and rooster analogies, and then the guitar playing the chicken lines, that was really a cute song. So how do we switch from that to the fall season? We are in this fall season now in October, and let's hear a song written by Joni Mitchell. The song is called The Circle Game, that deals with the circle of the seasons. And this is a live performance by Joni, who was joined by James Taylor, two free-thinking musician singing The Circle Game.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the painted ponies go up and down. We're captive on a carousel. We can't return, we can only look behind.
that was, those were two free-thinking musicians, Joni Mitchell and James Taylor. And if you are looking for proof, if you're looking for documentation about why we're calling them non-religious, you can always go to our excellent Free Thought of the Day site, ffrf.org/day. You can search by month, you can search by name, and find out more about their Free Thought views.
So after this next break, the Minnesota State Representative Mike Freiberg will tell us why he and some of his congressional colleagues started the Secular Government Caucus that works to combat Christian nationalism. And this is A Little Bit of Harvest Moon by Neil Young.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. As we told you earlier, in Minnesota, there is a brand new secular government caucus that has the tagline, resisting Christian nationalism and defending church-state separation. The caucus was founded by four members of the legislature, Senator John Marty, Representative Athena Hollins, Senator Jen McEwen, and Representative Mike Freiberg. And we have Mike Freiberg, Representative Freiberg, on the phone with us today. He was first elected to the state representatives in 2012. He served on the Golden Valley City Council. He's focused on issues related to health care, local government, the environment, and election policy. He's authored many pieces of legislation that have become law, even though Minnesota is one of only two states with a divided legislature. He works in his day job as an attorney for a nonprofit organization committed to improving public health. He's also worked as an adjunct law professor at Mitchell Hamline School of Law and the University of St. Thomas School of Law, teaching courses in legislation and public health. So, Representative Freiberg, welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
And I guess first I want to say that I think there are two of you in this 24-member caucus, I don't know if you said there were 24 joining, who actually do identify as non-theist, and you're one of them. You call yourself an agnostic?
Yeah, that's, I grew up going to a Unitarian church, Unitarian Universalism, accepts the word of all religion, I think is what they say, or a lack of religion as well. So I would probably identify myself religiously as an agnostic. I'm not actually sure who that second member is.
I think Senator Jennifer McEwen describes herself, I'm looking at a story, maybe it's wrong, that she describes herself as a secular humanist.
No, I'm sure that's correct then. There's no litmus test, to be either religious or non-religious to be a member of the Secular Government Caucus. You just need to believe in the separation of church and state. And actually, Senator Marty comes from a line of Lutheran pastors, and he's a religious person himself, but he believes very strongly in the separation of church and state. So,
well, that's wonderful. And what I think is amazing is that there are 20, you have 20 colleagues joining the four of you who signed this. 24 people are now part of the Secular Government Caucus. That's more than they have in the Congressional Free Thought Caucus that was founded several years ago in D.C. So congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. No, I was very encouraged by the amount of interest that there was in the caucus. And, it includes members from the metro area, which happens to be where I live, but also greater Minnesota, and it includes members from, very politically competitive districts as well. So I do think we're getting to a point where, there's greater recognition that, there needs to be advocacy for separation of church and state, and I think some members view it as not a political liability, but actually politically beneficial to advocate for that as well, which is very encouraging to me.
Well, and to us, it's music to our ears because that's what FFRF exists to promote. And so let's talk about the other people who joined who are religious, who do not identify as non-religious. Why would they care? Why would they join this caucus?
Well, I mean, I think they recognize that, you know, when you try to impose a specific set of religious beliefs on the population in general, you know, it's not just non-religious people who suffer from that. You know, it's people who belong to a religion but who have different religious beliefs. And I think, you know, I'm kind of speculating, but I, you know, as to it, because like I said, I identify as an agnostic, but you know, I would think from their perspective, they would think that you know, imposing a specific set of religious beliefs just runs the risk that those beliefs don't line up with theirs. I mean, I think certainly Senator Marty, I've heard him bring up many very specific examples of policies. So you mentioned that we are one of the only states in the country with a divided legislature. So I'm in the House, which is run by Democrats. Senator Marty is in the Senate, which is run by Republicans. So they've, you know, he's had to fight off several pieces of legislation, and he's mentioned them specifically that he doesn't agree with and that don't line up with his religious beliefs either. So, I think that's part of the reason. I think religious people who do come from a religious background would still strongly support the separation of church and state.
So what is, do you happen to have the mission statement of the new caucus in front of you, or do you, if you don't, we could read it? But if you have it,
yeah,
you could read it?
Sure. So the Secular Government Caucus, we're a coalition of non-believers and religious people supporting the separation of church and state. Our mission is to promote public policy based on reason, science, and moral values, protect the secular character of our government by adhering to the constitutional principle of separation of church and state, oppose discrimination against atheists, agnostics, humanists, seekers, religious and non-religious people, championing freedom of thought and conscience, and to provide a forum for Minnesota legislators to discuss their moral frameworks, ethical values, and personal religious journeys.
Well, that is just, like I said, music to our ears. Now, I think that there is sort of a history of people who join the caucus kind of having to fight battles in your state legislature about separation of church and state. For example, do you want to talk a little bit about Project Blitz, if you're familiar with that? Well, you know, that's the group that wants to put in God We Trust in all schools and...
Okay, sure. Yes, thank you for... Yeah, that. So that was more of an issue in the state Senate, so I didn't deal with that as directly. But as I mentioned, the state Senate is controlled by Republicans, many of whom, you know, are trying to impose a specific religious viewpoint, I would say. So so I know, you know, Senator Marty has mentioned this several times. There was a bill that was, I believe, was passed the floor of the Minnesota Senate, in fact, to allow schools to place In God We Trust on the walls of the schools. I mean, and, you know, that may not seem like a huge deal in the grand scheme of things, but if you are a student, I mean, if you are a student who is an atheist or an agnostic, I mean, there's a lot of peer pressure when you're in elementary and junior high and high school to conform. It puts them in an uncomfortable position when there are religious messages placed on the walls of schools. You know, another issue that's come up in the school context is just the whole issue of prayer at school-sponsored sporting events, and the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, and what I think is a very disturbing decision, said that that's fine, you know, for a coach who a lot of students look up to, you know, publicly be praying on the sidelines and inviting students to join, you know, sporting events in particular, I think, are you know, sports teams is an area where there's a lot of pressure to conform for students. And so, you know, they, I'm sure, would feel pressured to go join that. And we've had legislation introduced in Minnesota also to allow coaches to, you know, at public school-sponsored sporting events to pray on the sidelines, basically addressing this situation specifically. So there's, you know, particularly in the Senate, you know, there have been some examples of a specific religious viewpoint being advocated for at the government level and encouraged.
And Representative Freiberg, if I might interrupt, I understand
sure.
that you in the State House put a stop to that In God We Trust poster bill, correct?
Yeah. So as I said, it passed the Senate. I forget, it might have been part of an omnibus education bill. And then so the differences have to get ironed out between the House and position. I wouldn't say I personally put a stop to it, but I would say the House in general did not
yes.
agree to that position, and it did not become law.
So have you been able to meet in person with the new caucus? Do you have educational speakers, or what does the caucus do?
Yeah, no, we only just formed. We only announced the formation recently. So, we kind of wanted to let, before the election, know people know of our existence. As the four chairs, we've met a couple times to talk about it, but we haven't. We have not yet met in person. I mean, honestly, at this point, a lot of people are very focused on the election. But our intention is once the new legislature convenes in January, that we will start hosting meetings either in person or by Zoom. And we'll invite all members to join, too, because there'll be, at this point, there are several members of our caucus who are not running for reelection. So our intention would be to open this up to all legislators once the new legislature has been sworn in.
So we are talking with Representative Freiberg, Mike Freiberg, about the newly founded Secular Government Caucus in the Minnesota State House. And when we come back, Representative Freiberg, we want to ask you if you've had any flack for co-founding the caucus, if you've had any flack for being an agnostic elected official, and a little bit more about what the caucus will be
You're
doing.
Asking a politician if they've ever had any flack? I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back after this break.
Necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. And we're continuing our talk with Minnesota State Representative Mike Freiberg, who's one of the four co-founders of the brand new Secular Government Caucus in that state, which exists, as they say, to combat Christian nationalism and to defend church-state separation. So, Representative Freiberg, one of the big issues, of course, with the religious right is women's rights and abortion. And we're going to promote this show with a photograph of you entering the chambers, I think it is, carrying a sign saying "Stop the Abortion Ban." Is the Christian right pushing really hard against abortion in your state?
Yeah, I mean, like any state, it's a constant battle. I mean, we are fortunate that in Minnesota that the Minnesota Supreme Court has interpreted the right to privacy in the state constitution as affording a right to reproductive health care, including abortion care. It actually, just a month or two after the Dobbs decision came down at the federal level, a state Supreme Court decision came down, striking down some of the unnecessary obstacles that had been put in place in Minnesota law. So, there still was a right to abortion in Minnesota, but there were some, there was like a minor consent provision. There were certain requirements on facilities that provided abortion care that were not medically necessary. So we do have a pretty, in the upper Midwest, we're kind of an island where there is access to reproductive health care.
Yes, we're very grateful, too, because here in Wisconsin,
yeah.
That it's banned, which is just intolerable. So a lot of women
Go
ahead.
Sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yeah, no, it's I don't mean to suggest everything is we're completely risk-free here. I mean, you know, there's certainly the possibility that, you know, that a anti-abortion governor could get elected and appoint justices to the Minnesota Supreme Court who would be inclined to overturn that decision. There's the possibility that the legislature could put an amendment to the state constitution on the ballot to change that decision. So, you know, and certainly there's a chance that, you know, and legislators can always introduce any bill they want, and there's always a risk that they could pass, and at least that could muddy the waters. So
yeah, it's going to be a constant fight, thanks to Alito and the Dobbs decision, where he said, oh, we're going to get rid of all this acrimony, and of course all it's going to create is practically a civil war. So, but as I was saying, we're grateful that right now the situation is pretty good in Minnesota, and that's where a lot of northern Wisconsin women are, of course, going to the Twin Cities. So thank you for everything you're doing to keep that law intact. So I wanted to talk a little bit about another issue that had come up again in your Senate that I think propelled a lot of interest in creating the Secular Government Caucus. And something about a controversy with the state legislative prayer caucus that was unhappy with the Minnesota Historical Society inviting a distinguished law professor, Stephen Green, who had written a book called Inventing a Christian America, The Myth of the Religious Founding. Is that something that you think opened eyes to the problem?
Yeah. No, it's certainly another example of, you know, a specific religious view trying to be imposed on, you know, quasi-government entities. But, you know, in that case, it was the Minnesota Historical Society, which does receive some state funding. They had invited Professor Green to come speak, you know, and one of the things he talks about is that, you know, the United States was not intended to be founded as a religious or a Christian nation. And, you know, the fact that there was intended to be separation of church and state. And some of the key senators who control the funding for groups like the Historical Society just proposed just basically defunding the Minnesota Historical Society because they were upset about this, even though, you know, from everything I understand about the professor, his materials are well-sourced and rooted in the historical record. Again, that's an area where, you know, in the House we were able to prevail and not cut off funding for the Historical Society. But the fact that, you know, funding for important civic organizations like that could be jeopardized simply because some people disagree with the viewpoint of the speakers is troubling to me. And it is another example of trying to impose a specific, you know, viewpoint, in this case one that's not even rooted in the historical record.
Something else that really caught my eye with the founding of the Secular Government Caucus is that it does have that sort of subtitle or
tagline
that it's there to resist Christian nationalism and defend state church separation. The defend state church separation I get, but the resist Christian nationalism, this is really big, that there are 24 members willing to come out and say they're against Christian nationalism. Recognizing Christian nationalism at all has been a relatively new thing. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, you know, when we're looking at, you know, the intrusion of religion into government and civic society in the United States, it is usually, it's not maybe exclusively, but it's usually a specific brand of Christianity that is being looked at. And it's one that, you know, opposes access to reproductive health care, including abortion care. It's one that wants to put slogans up in schools that I don't think belong there. And I think we're just kind of acknowledging what the reality is in the United States. That, you know, it's not people trying to impose Jewish law or Muslim law or Buddhist, you know, or any sort of Buddhist or Hindu tradition. It's a very specific brand of Christian nationalism that's present in the United States and present in a lot of elected officials here. So we were very upfront that that's, you know, what we're concerned about. That's the biggest threat in terms of separation of church and state in the United States and in Minnesota. So we just felt it was important to call it out and to be honest about it.
Are you aware of anybody in the legislature identifying as a Christian nationalist, or are they just doing Christian nationalist type things?
Yeah, I don't know that anybody has specifically used that term to identify themselves, but I think it's an accurate description of what's been going on. So, like, I don't know that they would self-identify with that term, but I think it accurately describes what we're concerned about.
Well, they're all over the country. We've got them in our state too, and of course, not all Christians are Christian nationalists. Many of them really do support state church separation. Like you say, Senator Marty is a Lutheran. And many of the others are churchgoers who see the importance of keeping religion and government separate. And I really like that mission statement that you read for the new secular government caucus. And the first plank of that, where you say, to promote public policy based on reason, science, and moral values. Well, duh. I mean, isn't that what government's supposed to do? Isn't it interesting that we would even have to say something like that? Because there are some members in the government who are basing public policy on other kinds of values besides reason, science, and secular moral values. Who are some of those people in your state?
Well, I mean, it's similar to any state, and this isn't an issue that's necessarily – I mean, certainly we're seeing a rash of public policy and public discussion that is, you know, not – that is – based in whatever the opposite of science is. And this isn't an issue specific to religion or anything. I mean, sometimes, honestly, it's just, you know, people trying to make money through selling, you know, medicine designed for horses to humans based on an unfounded belief that it'll cure COVID. And, you know, we see that in Minnesota as much as anywhere. We actually have a Republican candidate for governor who's advocated the use of ivermectin and who's sowed doubt about the benefit of vaccines. So, I mean, this isn't an issue that is specific, like I said, that's specific to religion necessarily. This is just, you know, there is just kind of an anti-science vein going through American governments right now, and we're definitely not immune to it in Minnesota, you know. So the anti-science, you know, if you draw a Venn diagram of, like, anti-science policy and, you know, Christian nationalist policy, they don't totally overlap, but there definitely is some overlap there as well. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And yeah. I think that it is just remarkable. It gives us such a lift. It's so hopeful to see so many people banding together in support of secular government, which shouldn't be radical. It should be such an American principle, but it's sort of been forgotten. So we're really grateful to you for your activism on this and for joining us today, Representative Freiberg.
It's been a pleasure.
And we also want to thank our listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM, in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania to WZML, in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, Bryan, Texas, KEOS, San Marcos, Texas, KZSM, Columbia, Missouri, KOPN, Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, Bellows Falls, Vermont, WOOL, Rhode Island, Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, Watkins Glen in Ithaca, New York, WRFI, and now starting to stream on the new nowwave.radio on Sunday mornings. And of course, hello to all you thousands of podcast listeners. Please give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell your family and friends to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And find out more about the new podcast, We Dissent, featuring female attorneys working for state church separation, including those at FFRF. Ask for more information at ffrf.org or just join us. There's a join link, and we would love to have you support and make us 38,001. So tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio. is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday